Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Launch Space. It's going to be a great episode today. We've got a recap of something that was announced at Build. It's a pretty exciting set of tools and capabilities for DevSecOps on GitHub and Azure. Got our guest here, Stephen Murawski. Before I introduce Stephen, I do want to mention that those of you who are watching this show on the YouTube developer channel, please do hop over to LearnTV, that's aka.ms/LearnTV, so that you can interact with the audience while we are broadcasting. This is a live broadcast, and we do welcome your questions and comments, and we'll see you over there, aka.ms/LearnTV. In the meantime, I just want to say welcome to Stephen Murawski. Stephen is the principal PM manager for our DevOps team here, the Cloud Advocacy. And anyway, I'll let you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself.
Thanks, Brian. It's great to be back on the Launch Space. And so I'm Steve Murawski. I am a principal cloud advocate, as Brian mentioned, and I focus on the DevOps scenario. And so I lead the team of advocates focused on all DevOps topics, great and small, including DevSecOps, right? Like, how do we bring our security folks into the DevOps experience? And my background is a little bit of dev, a little bit of ops. I started out as a sysadmin, doing a lot of operationally things, and then spent time on the development side as well, bouncing back and forth between those roles. Worked at a public safety software company, helped run a little Q&A website that was recently in the news again, Stack Overflow. I was on the site reliability engineering team over there. Nice. And then just before I came to Microsoft, I was at Chef building tools for operations. So I got to spend a lot of time both in the development and operations world. And funnily enough, I worked in small enough shops that security was always a part of that. But it was never like this big, huge deal that we had the security department that we had to worry about.
Right.
But a lot of our customers, a lot of our community are dealing in the security space, are dealing with a lot of the challenges that we faced in the development and operations world and that we solved, or at least are on the way to solving, in the DevOps space. So we've kind of got this DevSecOps idea of how do we bring our security people into this as well?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I've been developing for a long time like yourself. And I remember when security and even ops was not really part of our job or our job description, at least. So we would build things and, you know, we were the cowboys just building things that worked. And once we got it working, we would send it over to some folks who did their magic in the security and ops side to make it perform and make it actually secure so no one would hack it. But those are some fun days. But these days, there's a lot of tools like the one we're going to show today that can actually help you with your security, sort of put up some guardrails so that you don't really get into a lot of trouble. And there's more and more of those going out there. And it's great to see some here. Now, you were just recently at Build.
Yeah.
So you had a couple of sessions there and you had the Ask the Experts. How was that? How was the experience in that?
You know, Build was interesting. Build was different this year. Obviously, because we're, you know, unlike previous builds I've been more heavily involved in, which were in-person events, this was all virtual. And so we had, we actually had some pretty good turnout for our session. And the Ask the Experts, so for a lot of the breakouts, they had Ask the Expert sections to make it easier, because you could ask questions during the sessions at Build, similar to how you can do it on LearnTV. So if you're at that aka.ms/LearnTV, and you see the Q&A tool there, the little chat tool, that same capability was available in the sessions at Build, and we had subject matter experts for each of the sessions there. But then we had these Ask the Expert sessions where, for my session, for example, myself, Lavanya Kasarabada, who is a program manager for one of the features that we were talking about, and Jessica Dean from my team we were all there taking questions live via a Teams live meeting. And so we got to answer some questions live interactively, get a few different viewpoints, and kind of have a conversation about a lot of these different topics. Kind of how we're chatting here today, but we got to go a little bit deeper.
Awesome. Yeah. And of course, we've got an hour here today, and the sessions build were only half an hour. So you had to be much more succinct in the build sessions. So we can riff a little more here, which is nice.
Cool. Yeah. But I mean, the build sessions, as you mentioned, there were half an hour. And we had roughly about 15 minutes for actual demo. So we only got to go into some of the stuff at a nice high level. We have a bit of time here today, so we get to dive a little bit deeper, and I'm really looking forward to that.
Sweet. So as Stephen mentioned, please do join us over at aka.ms/learnTV. If you have any questions or you'd like to just interact with us in any way, we're there. I'm actually monitoring things as we speak. And also for any of the links that we're going to mention today, you can find those at aka.ms/thelaunchspace. We actually have a direct show link, aka.ms/thelaunchspace. Container security, a little longer, but hopefully easy to remember. And you can find things there as well. So I'll let Stephen take from here and show some cool stuff.
Yeah. Let's go from, you know, kind of talking about this space real generally, and let's dive in and take a look. And we're going to explore some stuff in GitHub and Azure and how we can apply those with a DevSecOps workflow and help make our environments a little more secure. So here I am in GitHub, and I've got a GitHub organization, my Tailwind Traders dev organization, and we're looking at the Tailwind Traders website project. And we're going to take and apply a multitude of security capabilities, both at the development time and for runtime here. So we're going to start out, and we're going to head over to this security section in GitHub. And this is a public GitHub. Oops, helps if I click on the right screen. So we're going to head over to this is live. You can tell. So we're going to head over to security. And I've actually went and turned off some things so I can show turning them on. That's why we see these 37 dependabot alerts. We'll get there really shortly. But I'm going to start with code scanning. And I'm going to set this up because it takes a little while for the scan to run. And I want to have something to actually go and dig into with y'all shortly. So we're going to go to set up more code scanning tools. And the one we're going to set up is this CodeQL analysis tool. And I like to think of this as magic, because CodeQL is this awesome capability that can look at your code base and for a set of languages actually query the code paths that your application will take and look for vulnerabilities. And it does that based on patterns found by security researchers. And so all we have to do is basically create this GitHub action or this GitHub workflow, which has some actions in it. And that's going to include looking for C# and JavaScript, because right now it knows that those are the languages in my environment. And it's going to set the scan and then publish some results. So I like this. Let's get that started. And we will talk more about CodeQL as we look at some of the results a little bit later. Now, you know, as I said, this is a little bit more advanced of a step, but let's start with the basics, right? When we start looking at our code base, one of the simplest things that we can do to keep our code bases and our environments more secure is not put credentials into our repositories, especially public repositories. Once they're in the history of our code base, they become a lot more discoverable, and therefore, for code, that can be a good thing. For our secrets, not so much. So GitHub, out of the box, will provide some code scanning capabilities for secrets. And it looks for a lot of different secrets in public repositories. And we can see in the documentation, there's just a ton of, you know, different types of tokens that it knows how to look for and find in your code base. Right. And what it does when it finds these in a public repository is it will actually, it has an API to be able to send the notification about where the token was found to the service that the token represents. So for example, I do a lot with Azure. If it finds Azure secrets in my code base in a public repository, it notifies Azure Security. And then Azure Security will go back to, can go back to the subscription owner or the owner of the resource that it, that's affected and say, hey, you've got this leaked secret, you want to rotate things, or maybe even automatically revoke them. Right? There's these different capabilities. Now, for private repositories, it's a little different because a public repository is publicly searchable out on the web for, you know, everybody. And if it's in the history, it's still accessible. So you have to go back and scrub history. It's a bit of work to actually go and pull secrets out of a repository. And there's instructions on GitHub on how to go about doing that. But for private repositories, this is part of GitHub Advanced Security. And it would send notifications of found secrets to the repository maintainers, right? And there's actually a little bit more information that you can find here about, you know, configuring secret scanning for private repositories all in the documentation. We're not going to get into that too much right now, but just to let you know, there's two different behaviors. Now back to our repository here. So if I don't want secrets in my code, and GitHub is watching for those secrets to show up for the supported types, where should I put those things, right? Like, because I need them usually to do something. Usually it's in my CI/CD process or my application deployment process. I usually need some of those values. Well, we can put those into our in settings for the repository. There's a section for secrets. Now I've got a few secrets configured for this repository. I can configure them on for particular environments. If I'm using, if I'm deploying into particular environments, I've got those configured in my deployment patterns. I can set them on a per repository basis, or you can set them at the organizational level. Now I've got a few of these set in my my environment here, and let's take a look at how referencing those looks like inside of a GitHub workflow. So I've got my build my build and publish workflow here. And so I check out my code, and now I'm where I need access to those secrets. I can use the this reference note this reference identification or reference syntax, and I can index into the secrets and then just give it the secret name. And then at runtime for the action, those secrets will be pulled from GitHub. They're stored encrypted in GitHub, so that we know that they're safe. And then it will pull those at runtime to populate those values. And so in this case, I'm getting a URL to a container registry, username and password, so I can do a Docker login, so I can build and push an image. All pretty straightforward. So let's go back into GitHub here. Now again, I may not want to have these on a per project basis, so I could put them at the organizational level.
Hey, Stephen, yes. I was gonna mention, so from what I understand, so these secrets are for exclusively for GitHub Actions. Mm-hmm. And they run, what happens is when you create a GitHub action, it sits there in the YAML, which is obviously publicly accessible. And then when you run that code in an action, it actually uses this thing called a runner, which is a container that GitHub runs. So GitHub manages these machines and containers, and you actually check out the code. One of these runners checks out the code and then runs the code for you. And that's why you have to reference these secrets, right? Because they're in the repo, but they're not accessible to anyone outside that hasn't been authorized. And the runner has been authorized because it's part of the whole GitHub infrastructure. Would that be a good way to describe it?
Yep. Yeah, very much so. So let's take a look back in GitHub here. And so I've actually got the result of one of my build actions here. And so you can see, because it knows it's pulling a secret value, it puts a little asterisks in place here so that it's not echoing back those secrets into your runtime, right? Or into your build log. So we can see those were getting populated, but we don't actually see what the values are.
Sweet, great, absolutely.
Now, as you mentioned, right, this is all scoped to my GitHub experience. And so it's gonna be, you know, focused on my build, focused on what's happening in my GitHub actions. So what happens if we want to actually use those secrets in more than one place, right? Maybe we want to use those secrets at runtime as well. And so we want to have references that embedded in our application, or maybe we need to use them in some administrative tooling, right? Azure Key Vault gives us a great place to put some of that stuff. So I've actually created a Key Vault. And so let's pop into the Azure portal. And of course, that's the one thing I didn't directly open up to. But I have, as we go into my Azure portal here, I've got some different resource groups. We're gonna go for my launch space resource group. And I've created a Key Vault. And in that Key Vault, I've set up some secrets, registry password, registry username. So basically the same type of secrets that we were using from, that were getting pulled from GitHub, from the GitHub secrets. And I created an access policy and I created a service principle so that I could access those secrets. Now we've got some great documentation in docs on how to set that particular bit up. And what it would look like to change my build here. Would be I would add this Azure login with the credentials for my so I still need to keep something in the secrets. Right. I need to have the credentials for my service principal so that the GitHub Actions knows how to access Azure. Right. And once I tell it how to access Azure, then I can use something like Key Vault and this Key Vault secrets action to get back any of the secrets that I want. And then I can reference those in my later steps. And so rather than reaching into secrets for the registry username and password, I'm going to go into Key Vault, the Key Vault output, the secrets that were returned from Azure Key Vault, and bring those into my GitHub action. And that makes for a more centralized control experience if you're using Azure Key Vault. Because now in Azure Key Vault, I have the capability to set some expirations, to rotate my passwords there, rather than managing them on a per project or per organization manner in GitHub Actions or in GitHub itself. Now, it doesn't mean GitHub's a bad place to keep your secrets. It's just a different choice that we have access to. Right? You're gonna want to evaluate where you use those things based on the needs of your organization and your build and, you know, where your organizational security policy wants you to be. Your security team may want you to have all of those secrets in Key Vault because they audit that a particular way, or they may want you to have it in GitHub. It really depends on where your organizational controls exist. All right. So that's a little bit about secrets, right? We've got secrets in GitHub in the settings, and we have secrets in Key Vault that we can pull into.
Hey, but, sorry to interrupt again. I wanted to mention as well, one of the things that I found useful for demos, you know, that's our business as advocates a lot of the time is building demos, is I might have a application and I might have to shut down a service, bring another one back up in between demos. And in that case, I find it's very valuable to put the secret in the key vault, and then you can just change that secret without having to change the application, which is sitting in a GitHub repo somewhere that might have a connection string to a database or something. And that's probably a use case that a lot of users have out there, where you might have, moving from a test to a production database. We're using the same code. You might have a situation where you want to just change that connection string in Key Vault rather than creating different connection strings and different references to different things in production and in tests and QA, things like that. So that's kind of a cool way for Key Vault as well.
Most definitely. And Key Vault also makes it really easy to reference Key Vault secrets in different settings inside of like app service, for example, right? Yeah. There's a particular syntax that you could just map in. And so, Key Vault makes it easier to control that access, but access it from a broader array of services. Right?
Sure.
If it's in GitHub, it's going to influence my GitHub actions, but that's about it. That's the scope of where those things will be focused.
Yeah.
Now there's a lot more to security though than secrets, right? And while it may not seem like a very sexy thing or a very interesting thing, when we go back into GitHub and we go back to that security area in GitHub. If we take a look at my desktop here, there we go. We're back in the security overview section inside the project. And while policy may not always seem like a really fun place to spend our time, it can be good to set up a security policy for our project, which, especially if it's a public project, right? So we can set up a security policy. It's going to help walk us through getting that started, give us a template to work in for how to define a particular policy, how to define that policy, what versions are supported, how to report vulnerabilities, anything security related that we want to tell users of our public project, we can make in this security MD, which then becomes a pattern that other projects will follow as well. So let's just commit this. We'll get that in there. That's all good. All right. Now, once we've got our security policy set up, there's another section here we have of security advisories. And if we're creating as part of our project security policy, we want people to report vulnerabilities to us. One way then that we can share the results of those is in the security advisories. And so we can associate those to our project as well, we can define the severity of the, define the severity, ecosystem of where the project comes from, package name, versions affected. There's a lot of, we can associate CVEs or CWEs, give a title, description, and then we can draft those security advisories to share with the consumers of our open source project. Now, it's nice seeing this security stuff all come together and coalesce in this, in this security section here. Now, this is again where we get to get a little more actionable is the next item down in the security overview, and that's the Dependabot alerts. And so we can enable Dependabot alerts. By default, they're enabled for public projects. Once we do that, it pops us over into settings under security and analysis. And by default, we have dependency graph enabled. And so for projects that it understands dependency files, like for example, an NPM, you get an NPM lock file, you get which helps describe kind of the dependency tree of what your dependencies are. Those things are enabled. And so GitHub understands, for NuGet, you have a lock file created for that helps describe packages. different dependency management systems have different files in which they, you know, tell you about the specifics of the dependencies that you bound against when you build. So GitHub understands many of those. Now we can create alerts based on that. So when it knows that a dependency that you've bound against has a CVE or some sort of security vulnerability associated to it, we can get an alert right in GitHub. So we've enabled those. We can also ask that DependentBot send us pull requests to update to upgrade to non-vulnerable dependencies that are supported by the version constraints that we've set for our project. So now whether or not these are safe updates to make is really going to be dependent on how well you've specified your version constraints and how strong of a test cycle you have or a test process you have, right? So you can make sure that, hey, everything compiles right, great. Hey, everything runs through my unit tests, behavior hasn't changed, things are good to go. And then as we go forward from there. So we've turned those things on and let's see what it looks like. Oh, and it looks like my security alerts have changed some. So let's go there. Now in security, I'm seeing that I've got some DependentBot alerts. Let's go take a look at those. And we can say we just turned this on and already it's identified a number of potential vulnerabilities in my dependencies in my project. And we can sort, newest, oldest, severity. Let's go by severity. And so it's found some high severity stuff. Let's take a look a little deeper at what that is. Now, when we look at this, alert, we can see it's generating an automated security update. So it's already creating a pull request for me to help alleviate this particular vulnerability, and it tells me what the step is, what the particular vulnerability is, and lets me then be able to make a decision about whether or not this is something I can bump, or do I need to look into this a little bit more, or maybe this is a dependency that we might want to transition away from, right? But it's putting that power back in the hands of our engineering team to then go for and make that determination, rather than having this be something that we might have to hunt out later, or, oh, hey, by the way, I remember hearing about that this vulnerability in a particular library. Maybe we should check to see if we're using it somewhere. DependentBot helps bring those things right to life for us. All right. So once DependentBot has a chance to get some of those pull requests open, oh, I think we've got one already. Let's go take a look here. Before we dig into this, I wanted to make sure we saw this banner. So if you have DependentBot's alerts enabled for your project, when you go to the page, you'll see, hey, we found some potential security vulnerabilities in your dependencies. And because it wants, GitHub wants you to see these things and wants you to have secure code and wants you to address those potential vulnerabilities and make be able to see and make those determinations. So you can go right from the main page here to that see DependentBot alerts. And let's see some of the pull requests here. All right, bump SSRI from 6.01 to 6.02 in this app. All right, let's take a look at that. And we can see it's correlated to that dependency, so it tells us a little bit about that. It brings in the change log from SSRI and lets us know, this looks a little broken image-wise. But there's a link to a compatibility score, which is not playing nice for me right this moment. But you know what? We've got a PR build going. We've got CodeQL analysis going on these. So we'll let those complete, and then maybe we'll come back and merge that. So DependentBot is a can be a dramatic benefit to your maintenance of open source projects, as well as your own internal projects, in large part because managing we use so many dependencies, and our dependencies have dependencies, right? And the tree of dependencies that we have in our applications, so that we can focus on application logic, can get to be rather unwieldy. And so having a tool like this that traverses your dependencies, looks for vulnerable stuff, and then helps you bring your code base up to date by opening those PRs for you that you can go and review. And as you can see, kicks off your CI so that you can build an even higher degree of confidence that making that change will work well. Then I'm gonna go ahead and merge this now, I guess. I'm feeling confident today. We'll get that merge bump. All right. So now that we've taken care of that SSRI vulnerability, so that dropped my vulnerability count down 26. So there were actually several instances of that SSRI vulnerability actually showing up in my scan results. So now that we've gotten that sorted out, let's go back and take a look. We've got some CodeQL scans that have run, and let's see what happened with those. So if I go into my actions, we've got our CodeQL scan here. And let's take a look at the first one that ran for us when I added CodeQL. And we've got C# and JavaScript. So it figured out what languages my project had. And even though I've got multiple languages in this project, like many of our projects do, it was able to look at both of them for me. So it builds my application, takes a look at, runs some analysis. And we've got a few findings here. Now, it's not so easy looking at this, right? A whole lot of text we're scrolling through. So let's go back to our security tab, because again, that's our home for all security things, and look at our code scanning alerts. And right now it's saying that we don't have any alerts. So most of that other stuff that was coming up there is all warnings. Now we can change what breaks our build. So in settings, under security and analysis, we can go in code scanning and we have check failures. So what should fail? Is it only errors, errors and warnings, or any alert? All right. So let's flip this to any alert just to see our build break, right? Try not to maintain too much Let's just get my password in there because we want to make a change that it thinks is that it wants some sudo rights for. I'll just take a moment here while I remember my password with my password manager. All right, so now that's going.
I think it's password 123, right? Is that right?
Yeah. That's exactly. So, yeah. All right, I was able to save that up. And so now we've got that set for any alert. And we can go back to our CodeQL. And let's see, we can kick off another run just to, or let's cancel that one. And when that one cancels, we will start a new run. And what that will do is we'll get to see some errors. Okay, there we go. Got that canceled. And let's see. we will make a small change and start a new evaluation. All right, so to make that small change, let's go back into VS Code. And I will push my change to this build. So let's commit that. And let's use Key Vault. And we'll push that change. Yes.
Hey, while that's pushing, I do have a couple of questions that have come in from the audience. Andrew, thank you for your questions. He's asking, I think you're going to be covering this a little bit more in the Security Center, but you know, just general guidelines on what to implement in a good DevSecOps environment versus things that you can, you know, what's the minimum viable DevSecOps environment, I guess is the question. And the following question was more about, is there a way to incorporate sort of a security score versus just that number of errors that are there? So you can have a combination of, is there a way to customize that, I guess?
Yeah. So in terms of getting started and like minimum viable DevSecOps, some of that's going to depend on your organization. However, the way I like to think about it is a lot of it depends on your persona, right? So if I'm a dev and I'm coming in and I'm trying to ship some code, I want to make sure that the code that I ship is, you know, is secure. It's that I'm not doing I'm not making any common mistakes, that I'm not shipping vulnerable dependencies. Right. And so these are things that like the CodeQL and Dependabot help me with on the development side of things. Once we start getting into, you know, once I deploy this code out and I want to start looking at pen tests and different more active attempts at, you know, compromising my application. Now we want to start bringing in somebody. We want to make sure that we're bringing in that security person, right? And whether it's an offensive test or if they're looking for how do we defend our environment, we want to make sure that we're bringing in that perspective and persona. Now, what we see in DevSecOps is really the further into the development cycle, earlier in the development cycle that we can fix things, the cheaper and more effective it is to fix. And as much of that low hanging security fruit that we can fix, and again, coming down to a lot of insecure coding patterns or insecure dependencies, if we fix that stuff early on, that leaves our expensive thinking humans who are doing security work to focus on the things that require a human skill and intuition and experience to more effectively do. And so we also want to make sure that we're providing visibility into our operations, whether it's security operations, whether it's IT operations, is to, you know, if there are known things, right? If I'm shipping a container that has known vulnerabilities in some of the dependencies, in order for our business to be able to make a risk determination about whether or not we go forward with that, we need to provide that information, right? If it's a hidden risk, then it becomes really easy for security to say, no, we can't ship these things because we don't know what might be wrong there. Just like it, you know, back in the early days, when I was getting into the DevOps space, you know, we had this mismatch in alignment in development and operations. And so what we saw was that operations were tasked to keep environments online, running, and stable. Developers were tasked on creating new features and, you know, deploying new software and things like that. Now, what IT operations found is anytime we change our environment, things go wrong, things break, things fall apart, and we get in trouble. Development found every time we're not shipping things, we get in trouble for not doing our job, and we don't get incentives for shipping new stuff. So we had this natural tension build of, hey, I want my environment not to change, and hey, I want my environment to change. But they're both trying to support the business the best way they knew how, but their incentives made them fight. Now, we fixed some of that with DevOps by making the operations folks partly responsible for delivering new capabilities, and we put pagers on the developers so that they get bugged when things went down, right? And as part of that, right, we built some empathy, we built some shared goals. Well, now we need to do the same thing on the security side of the fence, right? We need to bring security into so that they can see what's happening earlier in the cycle and have a chance to influence what's happening earlier in the cycle. But they also need to have some skin in the game when it comes to shipping software and achieving business results, right? Yeah. Because it was really easy for ops to say, no, don't ship any changes because the environment's too brittle. Now we have the same thing in the security set. No, we have these unknown security risks. Don't ship anything.
Right.
To, hey, we need to ship this. How can we make this most secure? How do we surface any risks that we do have? Because there will be risks, right? Like if you want to have totally risk-free software, it's not going to do anything. It's not going to talk to anything. It's not going to have any data. It's going to run in a computer that no one can access, right? So we're by default, because we're exposing our software to someone else and it's having access to data, we're making compromises. So what are we making those compromises about? And we can't have that without information, right? And so part of this whole DevSecOps experience is making that information available to all of the concerned parties.
Yeah. Also, it allows people to, an IT org can have staff who might be stressed to the limit or limited staff or no staff. And they might have, this is just a great way to be able to define roles as well, right? So you can make sure that the devs know that they are responsible for a certain number, to keep the number at a certain level before they pass it on to the security folks for review in the dependent bot, for example, and some of the other tools that they're going to show.
Since we're kind of talking about this observability and the communication between development and development operations and security, right? I think it's a great time to surface one of the things that we announced at Build. And that's this integration that we have now between GitHub Actions and container scanning and Azure Security Center. Now, containers are a hot topic, right? Everyone wants the containers. They want the Kubernetes. They want the Docker, right? So, one of the concerns that we have in the world of shipping container images around is outdated dependencies and security vulnerabilities and credentials all embedded in the container images. So one of the things that we've been talking with customers, we've been looking at the industry, and one of the things we've found is that the security folks really don't have a great view into what's happening at development time in terms of container scanning, in terms of, basically what are the things that are being shipped into production environments? And so we've had container scanning in Azure Defender through Azure Security Center for images in Azure Container Registry. We've had that for a while, but what happens when we try to shift that left, right? We want to move that container scan earlier in the process to give that team feedback earlier on. But we also want our security team to be aware and eventually be able to set policy about what vulnerabilities are we going to compromise on and say, okay, that's something that we know it's a documented vulnerability, but it's not something that's exposed in how we're going to run our application. Or it's not a feature set that our applications taking advantage of. So therefore, it's the risk is minimal. And so that they can set policy based on and have that policy then be turned into immediate feedback for developers. And that's where it's going. Right now we have a preview of that behavior where we can do a container scan in GitHub Actions and have the results brought right back into Azure Security Center so that the Azure Security Center becomes that kind of single pane of glass that we see for that the security professional needs to see what's happening in their environments. So let's see what this actually looks like. So inside of Azure Security Center, we have all sorts of recommendations and things, but to set up the container scanning, I need to go to pricing and settings. And the blog post that I was just on before is in the show notes in that the Launch Space Container Security, so AKA AMS, the Launch Space Container Security, that blog post is there and has links into all the documentation and how you can get started with this. So we go into pricing and settings, we select our subscription, and then we can go to integrations. One thing I didn't mention here, so as we look, it does require Azure Defender because I need to have the container registry scanning enabled. So once I have Azure Defender and registry scanning available, then I can go to my integrations and there's this configure CI/CD integration. So we click that and it helps us select a subscription. Then we pick a region where so Application Insights is used kind of as an intermediary step to relay the results of the container scan and get that ingested into Azure Security Center. And there are some Microsoft managed instances of Azure Security or of Application Insights that are available as part of this preview. So I will specify West US2. And then it creates an authentication token and connection string for me. Now, what do I do with these things? Well, it links you back into documentation. And so we can go look at docs. And it shows us that there are a couple of secret values that we can create in our repo. And then it gives us an example of the build definition. So let's wire that up. Now, I've already gone ahead and in my settings, in my secrets, set those things up. So I have my AZ App Insights connection string and AZ subscription token. So I set those up. You can see I did that a couple hours ago to make sure we were ready to go for today. And now we're going to go and update our build. And so I'm going to go back into VS Code here. Where's my VS Code? Let's see. Here we go. And we will close that so we can see. So I'm going to take this existing build that I have. I'm going to modify it slightly. So rather than having the Docker login, Docker build, Docker push, we're going to have Docker login, Docker build, scan for vulnerabilities, and then push, and then publish the results. Now there's a reason for this particular order. So the way the scan results gets reported, it has to be associated to something because of how it shows up inside of Azure Security Center. It's related to that image, the image being pushed into the container registry. So it helps us get more complete information about that container image. And we'll see what that looks like when we get into the portal. But I need the information from the Docker push as part of the results to send to Azure Security Center. So we're going to kick this off. But I've already run this earlier because it takes a little while for the build to happen, for the scan results to publish, and for it to be ingested into Azure Security Center. So I've pre-run this, and we can take a look at what that looks like. All right, let's get back into Azure Security Center. which is here. So in Azure Security Center, I want to go into Azure Defender. And I'll get to see a whole lot of stuff that's happening here as it loads. There we go. So I have one of my container registries being monitored. And it mentions all the other advanced protection stuff that's happening. So I'm going to go into container scanning results here. And it's going to show me that I have a high vulnerability, high severity vulnerability inside of my container registry. So if I look at the affected resources, I see that, oh, there's this new thing that showed up as part of this preview. That's the CICD critical findings. And it tells me, was there a scan in CICD of this, and were there things found there? So we can go take a look even more closely. So I've got a couple of container images here, and tells me how many of those images I have scanned and whether or not they had findings in CICD. So let's dive into this one, which did have some critical findings, like TTWeb. Now, all of them have found, all of them have show a high severity finding in the registry. But for one of these, the one I ran earlier, we have a CICD scan result found as well. So first, let's look at one without CICD scan findings. And so we see what the vulnerability is, and we see that there is no associated scan from CICD. So what does it look like when we have the one that was scanned in CICD? We get these additional findings here. And so we can see that there was actually a number of things that were found in the CICD scan that are not represented here because they're two different scan engines. And so that's another thing that I like about this process, right? Is not only are we taking the view, one view from one scanning tool, we're getting a couple different views because not every tool is going to find everything. So how do I see what these specific things are? Well, when I hover over this information bubble here, I get to see the repository that this came from in GitHub, and it's a link. It's an actual link out to that. I have an actual link out to the CICD scan that actually was run, and then it tells me what branch this came from and what commit. So let's go take a look at the. I think I may have deleted that GitHub action run. Let's see. Actions. I may have cleaned up too effectively before this. Yeah, I think I did. Let's see if it's in my all workflows. Yep, I cleaned up a little too effectively. So I don't have that scan result there, but we can see it as we, I didn't push yet. So how about this? Brian, I'm going to save these changes and push them.
Okay.
And then do we have any other questions that have come up that we can maybe then check in on this as?
Not at the moment. I've got a couple questions actually. Yeah. We talked about where to get started with DevSecOps. Let's see. I mean, how can we? Okay, we talked about managing access to secrets. What is the infrastructure's code? How does that help your security posture? And generally, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. So the person that came up with that question there, I think took a look at the one of the resources that we have linked in the show notes, which is aka.ms the Launch Space Container Security.
Yeah.
There's a white paper on 6 tips for your DevSecOps for implementing DevSecOps. And one of those tips is around infrastructure as code. And what infrastructure as code allows you to do is to take your code or take your infrastructure, define it in a kind of a serialized format so that you can recreate those environments at will. But what it also does is it helps you expose the security posture of those environments, right? So all of the security rules, all the network security group, role assignments, all of the access into those environments can be defined in code as part of that process. And so what it does is it's one of those things where I mentioned before, right? We want to bring information forward so people can see things rather than, hey, I stood up an environment, I clicked around in it for a little while, and now who knows what the settings are, right? We bring all that stuff forward. And then as we change our environment, we change that code. It can go through a pull request and review process. We can write tests to validate that my environment got to the state I expect it to be in. Mm-hmm. And by nature of doing that, we've increased the strength of our security posture. And then when it comes time, like for an audit or something, rather than, hey, show me the settings page of this to prove that the right people have access, like we can show them the infrastructure's code that provisions that access code. And hey, right. and we can show them the history of application of that policy into the environment. And you have a much stronger audit log then of how the environment's changed over time. And so it gives you a lot of additional benefit and control there.
Cool, nice. So we have about 3 minutes left. I just want to say, if anyone has any questions, please do join us at aka.ms/learnTV and ask away. I do have one question. Now, today we showed a lot of security-based things that are based at GitHub and Azure. Are any of these tools applicable to local containers? You know, if you're running these on your local machine, is there any way to sort of reference those and check them out before you get them out to GitHub or?
Yeah, so sort of. So like the tools that are being used for the GitHub action they're open source scan tools, which you should be able to run locally. I haven't myself. But also, if your local development loop includes bringing those containers locally to your workstation, if you route them through your Azure Container Registry, or even if you're going out to Docker Hub, but you have your CI/CD scanning happening, right? Like you might have multiple layers of, like we build a base image and then we put our application on top of our base image, and right. So as long as you're applying these patterns at those different stages, your local experience will benefit from them, mm-hmm. even if you're not running those particular tools locally.
Good point. I mean, you can use something like ACR build. So you can, in our Azure CLI, we have a command AZ ACR build, which is based on Docker build. So if it's building locally, you can run it on ACR and build it there as well. And that would presumably trigger these security tools as well, because it's in if it successfully builds, it'll be in a security ACR registry entry, and then that would actually have the results that you were mentioning as well. So,
yeah. Yep. So if we can hop back over into my desktop for just a moment, I want to show you what the scan results look like when you look at the build at the GitHub actions work, the GitHub workflow run. So it right in your container scan results, right? It's going to list out some of the, you know, the CVEs that it finds. We can see that we got this task failed. The build mm-hmm. succeeded because we said continue on error so that we could publish the results. But we can see that there were findings here that probably would have wanted us to stop. Right. So we can see that. We can see that there's a problem with GCC.
Speaking of stopping, I think we have to wrap it up
yes.
there. So Thank you, Stephen. This is great insights. Anyone who wants to find out about the white paper that Stephen referenced and any other links that we've talked about here, go to aka.ms/the launch space container security. I put it in the chat as well. Thank you for folks who are asking questions, especially Andrew out there. Appreciate all those questions. Sorry we didn't get to all of them, but I may follow up with you after with a couple of things. He just mentioned something about Azure Arc and a couple of things, but we can talk about that later. So thank you very much, Stephen.
Oh, my pleasure.